gas forced signal starts to give you some predictive skill. So again, there's this inherent limit associated with the fact that initial value predictability is quite limited at these year-to-year timescales, and the greenhouse gas forcing has not yet given you much of a signal. And that's true for ice area as well. In the Arctic, although there's some very interesting seasonal aspects of the predictability in sea ice, but I won't go into that. The main message is that initial value predictability is limited to 1 to 2 years, and the greenhouse gas forcing only gives you predictability after something like 5 years. So perhaps, you know, we can do the seasonal problem, perhaps we can do the tail problem. But internal variability, much like we heard yesterday for the atmosphere, is also very considerable for the sea ice, even on these longer time scales, even in the presence of very strong forcing. So we've been looking at this in particular from these large ensemble simulations. I think these were mentioned yesterday as well. We have 30 members from the Community Earth System model. They run from 1920 to 2100. They use the high emission forcing for the 21st century. And the only difference in these simulations is a very minor perturbation in 1920 in the surface air temperature. We also have a complementary 2,000-year pre-industrial control run, so we can look at what the force signal is in these simulations. So what I'm showing here on the left are just the decadal scale trends. In gray is for the pre-industrial control simulations, so much as you'd expect, you know, they're centered right around zero here, but we do have fairly sizable trends on the decadal timescales, even in the absence of forcing. The blue distribution shows the decadal trends in the 2000 to 2049 time period, and the maximum observed trend is shown in red. So you do see there's this shift to negative values. So the forcing over this time period is giving you some predictive skill in terms of changes in decadal trends, but you also see that the range in decadal trends is enormous, and it actually increases in the warming. So we still have this very large influence of internal variability on decadal and multi-decadal timescales for the sea ice. And in particular here, we actually, in the 21st century, the first half of the 21st century, there are, you know, about 15% of decadal trends that are positive. So internal variability in the sea ice is very large. And on these timescales at which initial value predictability doesn't really give you any predictive skill. And just to illustrate that, this just shows one individual simulation from this 30-member ensemble, the satellite observations in red, this individual simulation in blue. These are both smooth with 5-year running means. You can see that year-to-year values in the thinner lines. But we would expect both rapid ice loss events and also decadal increases in sea ice in the future in a warm climate, just because internal variability in the sea ice is very sizable. And this does have an impact on the Arctic warming in these simulations. So this just shows the trends. Again, decadal trends, this is in the October surface temperature, during these hiatus events in sea ice, event time periods at which we have very little ice loss or actual increases on decadal timescales in sea ice. And you can see that during these periods, we have very little surface warming. And during these rapid ice loss events, which are larger than what have been observed, we see very sizable trends in the surface temperature on these decadal scales. So this means that if you're thinking about polar amplification, well, it's emerging here in the early 21st century. So this shows the surface air temperature changes globally averaged in red, and then for the 70 to 90 north region in black. You know, you can see that how amplified that warming is varies considerably from year to year, again, because of the very sizable internal variability in the system. And so if we just look at a polar amplification factor here, which is just the ratio of these two, the warming in the Arctic, you know, for 2010 can vary from almost nothing relative to the global warming. So basically the same amount of warming in the Arctic as what's happening globally, to something like 7 or 8 times the global average warming. So again, the influence of internal variability is very sizable for sea ice and also the surface air temperature response in the Arctic. So back to whether or not these things have implications for lower latitude linkages. Well, James gave a very nice talk about this earlier today, so I don't need to go into the mechanisms here. But we see in these model simulations, much like James showed for the CMIP-5 models overall, that we get declines in surface temperature variance associated with this mechanism and the fact that there's less cold extremes occurring. And we see that decline in surface temperature variance in these large ensemble simulations is strongly related to the amount of polar amplification. So, and this, James again showed this for the CMIP-5 models in their century sort of time scale. What I'm showing here is the year-to-year variations across this large ensemble in terms of how the polar amplification that varies year to year correlates with the temperature variance in these latitudes. And so you see this very strong negative correlation, meaning that simulations which have less Arctic warming in a particular year also have less, so I'm a little jet lagged, I have to get my signs right, less warming, they have less declines in temperature variance. So there's a negative correlation here. So perhaps if we could predict sea ice on year-to-year timescales, you know, we might be able to then understand better or have better predictive capability for the kind of temperature variance changes that James has been talking about. What about these proposed dynamical linkages? Do we see anything from these climate model simulations that could inform us on whether sea ice predictions on interannual timescales might give us some skill at predicting these dynamical linkages? Well, I will just say what was said yesterday quite strongly, that internal variability strongly influences the atmospheric circulation. This shows decadal trends in the northern annular mode or the Arctic oscillation from this large ensemble for this 2020 to 2080 time period. You can see there's not even a discernible shift in the distribution to positive trends here. And this is similar if I look at 20-year trends or other timescales as well. So the internal variability is very sizable. And that's true for things like blocking as well. So this shows some results from Rich Neal at NCAR, where he's been looking at blocking within the community air system model within this large ensemble. This shows his time series of blocking for this Europe region here, this box here over Europe, showing that the year-to-year variations in blocking across this large ensemble are very sizable, shown by the green shading here. And there is a small downward trend, but again, there's very large internal variability, and we don't see that this internal variability is strongly related to the sea ice conditions in these simulations. I do want to caution, and this was pointed out yesterday as well, that climate models do have biases in their depiction of some of these weather variations, and this just shows the bias in our blocking frequency in this atmospheric model, which is the atmospheric component of the community Earth system model. And I'm actually looking at 3 different versions of the model, CAM3, CAM4, and CAM5, and we've always had this persistent deficiency in the frequency of blocking over Europe in this model. And that's been being looked into. So perhaps on these longer timescales, the sort of decadal timescales, we don't really have much hope at capitalizing on Arctic lower latitude linkages for prediction, partly because of the very, very large internal variability in the sea ice cover. But on the seasonal to interannual timescale, there has been quite a few perfect model studies showing that we should have predictability in CX or might have predictability in CX on those timescales. And we do see that that's related to variations in surface temperature in the Arctic region and does affect the equator to pole temperature gradients. And we see that that in turn also influences thermodynamic links to lower latitudes in these climate model simulations. So perhaps we could capitalize on these linkages to give us some predictive capability on these shorter timescales. But I want to caution that the predictive signal in sea ice is likely quite small on these timescales. And they actually, our actual ice predictions have not been able to realize the predictability that's been indicated by these idealized perfect model studies. So there's something missing there, and part of it likely has to do with the observational network and the initial conditions that we use in these ice predictions. And also, as has been pointed out earlier in this meeting, mid-latitude extremes are affected by numerous factors. And I think there's some possibility that model biases may preclude this, the simulation of realistic linkages. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done if we're actually going to capitalize on these things for prediction systems. And in terms of thinking about prediction systems and what the needs are moving forward, so this just shows a very simple sort of schematic of what a prediction system is. So we take observations from satellite or in situ information, use that to come up with initial conditions to then use in our numerical models to then forecast forward and hopefully ultimately provide information relevant for climate services. So in terms of what's needed to realize Arctic sea ice predictability and possible links to lower latitudes with these systems, there's a number of different things that need to be done to improve this issue. So we've heard a lot about the fact that we don't have many observations in the Arctic. Now, I think it's clear to say we're not going to have many observations in the Arctic, especially when we're talking about the observational needs for sea ice, ocean conditions, et cetera. So we need an improved understanding of what, where, and with what accuracy we need these observations. We don't even know that yet. And so I think there's a great need still for observing network design studies. And there is work being done in this area. And actually, I think Johnny Day is going to give some discussion of this in some of the breakout groups, some of the work that they've been doing in this area. There's also the need for coupled data assimilation systems, because this is a coupled problem. And so we need improved data assimilation systems in this area. We also, of course, need model improvements. And model improvements with an eye to kind of the seamless prediction issue and variations across scales. On this interannual to decadal timescale model, drift issues are very sizable and problematic, and that's something that needs to be considered. And for climate services, we need an improved understanding of what is needed and what we can provide. And I think we very clearly need to better communicate the limits that are associated with internal variability. I think this is not terribly well understood by people in the climate services community. So I want to strongly emphasize that there's a lot of needs, but there is ongoing work to meet those needs. And I'm giving examples from the community Earth system model. I think these types of things are being done at many other institutions as well. But we are working on coupled data assimilation systems. Of course, there's a whole team of decadal prediction experiments that are being run by multiple centers coordinated through CMIP, and I think are providing a lot of insight on what predictive skill might be possible. And we're also doing things like developing models with the capacity for regional refinement. And in particular, this shows work being done with the ocean MPAS model that's being developed at the Los Alamos National Lab. So we can actually have higher resolution in these models where we want it or need it. And I want to also mention that in the area of climate services, these coupled climate models are starting to incorporate aspects that are potential use for climate services. So in particular, this shows some simulations with our marine ecosystem model within the community Earth system model. These kind of things might be possible to inform fisheries sort of information within our community land model, which is the land component of CESM. We're incorporating things like crop models, urban models, things of this nature, which might, again, provide insights relevant to climate services. So with that, and because I'm getting the nod that I need to finish, some concluding thoughts. I think sea ice predictions could enable improved information on lower latitude extremes, but ice predictability on interannual to decadal timescales is inherently limited. And we've heard that for the atmosphere. I don't think it's, I mean, sea ice is often considered a thermodynamic element of the system. It has very sizable and unpredictable internal variability as well. I think we need a lot of discussion and thought on how we might improve sea ice predictions on the sort of seasonal to interannual timescales where we think there is some initial value predictability in the system. And in terms of how to translate our skillful forecasts to useful forecasts, I think we need a lot more dialogue and a sustained conversation with user communities on what useful actually means. So with that, I'll take any questions if I have time.